Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. For more information about the news and links we talk about on the show, go to our website at geekson.com.
Hello.
Woohoo!
Hello. Welcome, my geeklings.
Excellent.
Thundercats, ho.
Welcome.
Chitara, yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
And not Panthera.
They always try to open it with not making any sense.
And yes.
They usually continue through the whole episode not making sense either.
That's pretty normal. So this week we are bringing you Bear McCreary, the composer of Battlestar McGalactica.
Medic Battlestar McGalactica.
That was the original title, and they changed it at the last minute. I was really excited. It was Battlestar McCreary, and they decided Battlestar Galactica was more appropriate. So I was pretty upset.
The Cylons with a deadly imp.
Did they know there was a show in the 80s?
Do you want fries with your Cylons?
I'm going to hang my head in shame.
That's right. It is our Battlestar Galactica special episode. So we'll do a quick introductions this week. I'm Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a filmmaker and graphic designer in Los Angeles.
And you're a what?
I'm a geek.
Thank you. And this is Donald Marshall. I am a writer and video game professional here in Hollywood.
And what are you?
I'm a geek.
And I am Peter Robinson, and I am a writer here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
I'm Matt King. I'm an actor here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
I'm Bear McCreary. I'm a composer here in Los Angeles, and I'm in a room with geeks.
Yeah.
Oh,
How dare you? Get used to it, Galactica boy.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the first time.
Wait till you hear his news stories. He's a geek.
Yeah.
That's right.
Uh-oh.
Well, how was your guys' geek week?
I was buying cars all week.
That's not geeky.
No.
Wow. Car collecting.
Well, yeah. The Honda Element, it's kind of geeky, but not so much.
No.
Saw Serenity with everyone here.
Yep, the geeks went and saw Serenity. Have you seen Serenity
I haven't
yet?
Seen it yet, no.
I dug it.
Oh, we saw it with Lisa, also was there.
Who was mobbed by fans immediately upon
leaving. That's right. She was the rock star.
I thought you were going to go dressed as your sister's character.
You
promised.
Yeah.
A little perky sundress.
Sandals.
I was, no but... I couldn't get her to loan me any of her clothes. So.
3 days worth
You'd
of facial hair.
You'd make such a good nubile farm girl, Aaron.
Right.
I'm telling you.
I think so.
Don and I played some board games, which I'm going to talk about later.
Which ones? Oh, you guys played together without me?
Yes.
Not that I can ever show up anyway.
Geeks from work.
But I'm going to bring up some ones that we've also all played.
Okay.
So that's pretty geeky. Anyone else do any geeky things?
I saw The History of Violence.
Yeah, me too.
How was it?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
The History of Violence?
The acting was awkward. And the director made some really, like, this is my first thought decisions.
Yeah, I'm not sure. There was some weird stuff in it, but I actually just completely enjoyed it.
What is the History of Violence?
It's a movie with
Viggo Mortensen and Ed Harris. David Cronenberg movie.
Based off of a graphic novel, not a comic.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, speaking of comics, just saw this on the forums, actually, for Geeks On. Nick Cage's wife gave birth, and they named their kid Kal-El.
Wow.
Yeah.
What?
Now, Kal-El Coppola Cage.
We have to confirm this.
Okay, yeah.
There is no... I mean, I'm shocked that his wife...
Would
doesn't
not
have the balls to say no.
I'm sorry, we're going to have to stab you in the eye.
It was her idea. Joking. I have no
idea. Yeah, exactly.
The sad part was when you said Nick Cage, I was actually thinking Nick Fury, agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
No.
So,
well, no, you geek. You know, no.
Well, also, I heard that online that the reason why Nick Cage changed his name to Cage is because he was a fan of the comic book Ghost Rider or whatever.
Oh, really?
Which he now gets to play, so...
I don't know.
God help us all.
It's all just...
Heard bad things about it.
Saw bad
oh, really?
Things about it.
Yeah, the bike looks pretty lame.
The bike looks...
We saw the bike, remember?
Horrible.
The bike looks like something out of a video game from, like, 94, you know?
It's horrible.
Bear, your geek is showing.
I'm sorry. my friend told me that the bike looked lame.
I heard.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, do we have any geek news this week?
Some.
Geek news.
News.
Done.
This week in geek news.
Hey,
so we've been looking for it.
Yes! The sound effect. Finally.
There you go.
We've been looking for that sound effect for so long.
So
really,
yeah, there you go.
Under a second.
He's here in 5 minutes. You
know what I was trying to get for the sound effect? Remember when the Super Friends, they had that transition music, that star effect? I was trying to do that, a search online for that sound effect to work in. I was going to steal it, essentially, to work into the geek news, because I thought it'd be a funny transition in, but I couldn't find it anywhere. I figured somebody would have digitized it and put it on. Can't find it.
And yet, no.
So if anybody out there knows where I can find Super Friends sound effects,
I was hoping for the Muppet theme, the Muppet News theme. Do you remember that? Was there music with it?
Not really.
I don't remember any
music. Oh, never mind.
In your head, there was, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I listened to it. I sang. I danced. Life was good. And then I watched the Muppet News.
Manamana.
Anyway.
Do-do-do-do-do.
Oh, God damn it. Do-do-do-do-do. Thank you very much.
Don, news.
It's stuck in my head so bad right now, I can't stand it! Oh, you had to say... Oh, dude, that's not cool.
That is not cool.
He's a composer, Aaron. That's like death.
Hey, welcome to my life. I always have a song running in my head.
So now we do geek stories about various geek news phenomena. Thank you. All right. Moving on. Sony apparently stepped in it big time in Italy when they started a new advertising campaign that featured a young man smiling impishly at the camera, giving it the thumbs up, wearing a crown of thorns.
I heard about this.
Oh, man.
With the subtitle, PlayStation. Passion for the past 10 years.
Wow.
Oops. Didn't go over very well.
We at the Sony thought we were appealing to a Confucius audience. Sorry.
Did they run it in the States at all or just there?
No, just in Italy. Just in the seat of Catholicism.
Yes.
And the thorns apparently were not just thorns. They all kind of came out and then branched into the symbols for the PlayStation.
Oh.
The little logos.
So with...
Not going over too well. So it's been pulled. There's a lovely link to the photo in the news.
Who is the dumb shit who thought of that?
Somehow it seemed like a good idea at the time while they were drunk.
Oh, man.
We'll put a link to that on our website.
We gotta. We must.
Yeah, I gotta see that because that really sounds like a bad idea. It sounds like a bad idea. Well, they would never do it in America. No one has the guts to do anything like that.
No.
America,
I'm trying to figure out where it would be a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, they were trying to say, the person from Italy they were interviewing was saying, if this was about, you know, if it was a Hindu god they were doing this about, you know, or Judaism, we still wouldn't be so hot on this idea.
No, I know. But, I mean, anything edgy gets tossed when it comes to...
religion.
Well, United States. So they wouldn't even...
They wouldn't even touch it.
I mean,
it.
They might say, well, we might get away with it in Europe, but they would just say, forget about it.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's just odd that would be the country they pick in Europe.
Italy. Yeah. That would be, out of all the countries in the entire world, that would probably be the worst.
Yeah.
Well, at least the guy wasn't crucified.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been a little worse. I mean...
Wow.
On a giant P?
Yeah.
PlayStation, right? Yeah, exactly.
All right. So in one of our past episodes, we talked about what's going to happen in the future. And on our forum, someone nailed us and said, this stuff's never going to happen. How can you guys even think about this? You know, someone curing aging, someone, you know, this type of thing?
Right.
Well, in our forum, someone else... Kalis posted an article, which is really interesting.
I think it's Kalis, actually.
Kalis. Okay. And basically what it says is that they've made this remarkable discovery of these mice that have the ability to regrow organs. And they're mice that have been genetically engineered to get lupus. And what happened was they went to go mark the mice by piercing their ears so they could tell which ones were which. And these mice suddenly healed with no scar tissue at all. And they were like, well, that's odd.
No, it's not. These mics are freaked out.
So they cut off a finger, and it grew back its finger. You know, so and they tested
it. Nice experiment.
Yeah, they tested it with all sorts of different...
Just keep cutting more and more and more off and see what grows back.
3 days later, the scientists came back, and they found one of their compatriots dissected on the table. The various body parts strewn about the room.
Exactly.
And a bunch of innocent-looking mice in the cage.
So we have removed all four legs. Conclusion, mouse is deaf.
The secret of didn't mean anything to you, asshole.
Yeah, exactly.
So the other thing that's interesting, though, is when they took tissue from these mice and they injected them into other mice, the other mice developed the same abilities. The children of these mice also develop the same
abilities.
This
sounds like a superhero genesis, like if the mice boy, if he bites, you know, the radioactive mouse bites him, he'll...
You couldn't think of a better name than Mice Boy?
Spider-Man's better?
Yeah.
Because he's a Spider-Man.
Okay, well, this is a mouse boy.
Well, Danger Mouse has been taken.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a good one.
Did you ever see The Friends where Phoebe goes, so who's Spider-Man? And he's like, no. It's not Spider-Man. It's Spider-Man. It's not like Phil Spider-Man.
The Jewish superhero version would be Spider-Man.
So what you're saying is we're going to have mice that don't age in the future.
Well, they think they're going to be able to apply this to people at some point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right before the world blows up and we find out that they own it.
I mean, could you imagine if some of these mice accidentally got loose in the general mouse population of the world? Soon we'll have super mice that regenerate at super speeds. Soon they'll be ejecting little amantium claws out of their little paws, and this will be bad.
That would be bad.
You know, there is something to be said about a mouse that can die. You know, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. Mouse traps are constantly being,
mouse traps should
zombified.
Not be set by mice. That seems like a bad idea.
Now, I have a question. How is the earring industry supposed to get past this regenerative hole in the ear thing once humans get it?
Clip-ons.
Or actually, look, it would be very easy to put a little, metal piece
spacer
to hold the hole.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
new industry.
We've resolved that.
Yeah. You're thinking ahead, man. That's good. Yeah. I like that.
I didn't want a whole industry to collapse just because they're trying to solve...
Well, all the people that leave the earring industry would go into extermination once we have overrun by immortal mice.
Right.
My question is, what happens when you, take off a zit and you grow a new head?
That's right. Yeah.
Or if you get dismembered and then the arm grows a new you.
Yeah. Yeah. You're still missing the arm, but your arm grows you.
Huh,
wait a minute.
Siamese twin.
Exactly. I could get that lip plate I always wanted.
Sorry.
All right, Matt.
Anyway.
Gross us out.
So, I don't have a gross out one.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Subway authorities lean on designer of iPod-friendly maps that don't break copyright laws. Basically, this guy took Subway maps, broke them down, showed them on the iPod, created a website called www.ipodsubwaymaps.com. It was for San Francisco, New York, a bunch of other
things. So you get around and have it displayed on your color... photo iPod.
Right. Just easy, no problem. New York and San Francisco got in a big old hissy fit, said, you don't get to have the rights to do it. We're going to fine you. Did a bunch of things. Basically put the kibosh on his whole operation.
Under what
because
grounds?
Probably because he was it probably was too professional and too many people were downloading it and they thought they saw something that they should have done.
Yeah, what they said was both agencies said copyrights they held to the maps barred anyone from repackaging and redistributing them without permission. So this guy he works for daily for an online magazine called Nerve.com. I mean, he's not making any money off of these things. He just thought it would be something that's useful for everybody to do. It was fun for him. And, it was getting 50,000 downloads a day.
Oh, my God.
And then they shut it down. Huge complaints. Basically, the MTAs are both coming at him and saying, yeah, sure, you can do it, but you're going to have to pay us.
Redraw.
You're going to have to pay us.
Just redraw it.
$500
it's a damn
bucks
Subway map. Six lines and some circles and some
words. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Subway maps. It takes about 30 seconds to design one of those.
Yeah, they're saying it's all ours and we want licensing fees now, so...
F you, New York.
I love just getting Aaron to say F you. That's my entire purpose in life.
I mean, come on. If you're not going to get off the pot and give us what we want, fuck off, you know? We're moving faster than you know? I'm sorry.
Get this. BART spokesman Linton Johnson said the agency is working on coming up with its own downloadable version of Subway Maps for iPods.
But they are now.
Yeah, exactly.
He said BART's chief complaint with BART's maps was that they didn't reflect changes made to the transit system's rote alignment earlier this month. We don't want to confuse our customers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And cut.
Customers say, bite me.
Yeah. All right, Bear.
I read today, Kirsten Dunst said, we have really great people as the villains in this film, Spider-Man 3 she's talking about, Thomas Hayden Church and Topher Grace, Venom and Sandman. Maybe I wasn't supposed to say that.
Oops.
Dunst reversed her claim, admitting Church will play Sandman and Grace, Venom.
Topher Grace?
So we've got the two bad guys.
Topher Grace as Venom?
Venom, yes.
What?
What?
That's what she said.
I mean, who cares?
Topher Grace from That 70s Show?
Yeah.
We'll play wait a minute. Venom.
You would have said the same thing about Maguire as Spider-Man back in the day.
No, because I could see him as Peter Parker.
In the costume, though? Out of the costume, you would have went, okay, Peter Parker.
I would have figured they'd cast someone else in the
costume. Fine, but Eddie Brock outside of the costume is supposed to be a, like, heavy lifter, a big mofo.
Honestly, it gives me hope, though. If they're going to take this character who's a big muscular bad guy, I mean, they could cast Schwarzenegger like they did for Mr. Freeze, and you get something lame. But no offense, but most muscular actors aren't very good. I mean,
well, what about...
What's your point?
My point is that I think that they're thinking in the right direction, and maybe...
Hey, man, there are a whole bunch of guys in the WWE.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
Well, prove you
more,
wrong.
You're right.
This makes it possible that someday I might be able to play, you know, Wonder Woman or something.
Yes.
You know?
That's right. I would,
the door is now open.
I would pay to see you play Wonder Woman.
I would pay to see that as well, yes.
Are you telling me that Roddy Rod Piper can't act?
Well, he's past his prime, man. I mean, you know, if this were back in the 80s, I'd be all over that.
No, well,
know.
First of all, there's probably not going to be a guy in a costume. I'm assuming it's going to be all digital. Because he's got to be
all whack.
I mean, there's no one who can look like Venom.
Right.
Unless they did like Doc Ock and added things coming out of his central body.
Like, isn't he extremely top-heavy, like the Hulk, in a way?
No.
Yeah.
Well, kind of like, later on.
No, he is.
He's, like, all shoulder and, like, two scrawny
and, like, a really
legs.
Let's face big
it, it's the current
mouth,
Venom.
Right?
Yeah,
Venom, and that's the ridiculous, overly muscular big guy.
Well, I mean, if I see a guy in a costume playing Venom, I'm out.
I could see Topher Grace as Carnage. I just can't see him as Venom.
I thought Carnage was a woman.
No, Carnage is a serial killer.
Which is the female Venom.
There's a female Venom?
There is a female Venom.
But when did the comic jump the shark?
Yeah, exactly.
Where there's a female Venom.
And the little kid Venom, and the black kid Venom,
well,
and
the
dog
Venom,
yeah.
Do you guys remember, I don't know, maybe some of you are too young. Do you guys remember the year that the Saturday morning cartoons, that every single cartoon came out with a baby?
No.
The Plastic Man
had
a baby.
Oh, yeah.
Pac-Man had a baby.
Pac-Man had
a
baby.
There was a Rubik's Cube baby.
Shmoo, I think, somehow. Then the... that was when Scrappy-Doo came out.
I was going to say the king of them is Scrappy-Doo.
Captain Caveman, I think, even had a baby. It was all
Captain
one season
Caveman.
Where they all had babies. It was like the condom broke.
You just wonder what happened 9 months earlier in the previous season. Why... Every show must had a cut episode, you know?
I always wondered why all the teen angels look so tired.
What's the deal, though, with nephews? Why does every cartoon character have nephews, but none of them have kids? Popeye? Donald Duck? They all have Mickey? They all have nephews.
Because then they have to explain where they came from.
And Minnie, they're both beards.
But except for Goofy, though. Goofy had a kid. We never saw his wife, right? But he's got a kid. So Goofy gets it on and Mickey and Donald don't?
Because they
Goofy
don't want to have...
In Goof Troop, that was his kid.
They don't want to have the characters have to get married, and they don't want to have them have kids out of wedlock.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm serious about that, too.
They have to remain desirable to the female public.
This is true.
Yeah.
All those chicks out there that like to fuck dogs when they see Goofy.
Zoinks!
Well, Robin Williams said that that Goofy is basically what every man looks like when he orgasms. Every guy gets to that point, and then they go, "Ear."
Oh, I was wondering what he was. So he's not a dog or a human. He's just a human and...
No, he's
orgasm.
A dog.
Yeah.
He
a dog?
Was originally called Dippy Dog.
Yeah.
And check this out. Why can he talk and Pluto can't?
Yeah.
What is Pluto's deal? He's
Pluto
a pet.
Pluto is his dog.
Sometimes he is, actually. And
that's
so,
freaky.
I know. That's
a dog with a dog.
It's really
Maybe
weird.
He's a mog.
Maybe.
Half
All right,
man,
I have
dog.
Some...
Wait. I have a question.
Yeah.
A question. Okay, going back to Spider-Man. I know we got to wind back a little bit.
Spider-Man.
But, okay, now we have two villains. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Two villains was the death knell of Batman.
No, it wasn't.
No.
Four villains
was the death knell
of Batman.
Because let me say that Catwoman was not actually a villain.
Well, we don't know that they're going to do this the same... We don't know that they might not try it the same way.
Catwoman was the love interest, not really the villain.
I think two bad guys and all the Batmans were shitty. There was no reason to have two villains. It was lazy writing. They just couldn't... They just kept throwing more shit in there. I mean, seriously... The second Batman movie should have just been called Catwoman, because it's really all about her.
Yep. Well, the first one should have been called Joker, so that doesn't make...
exactly.
That's not a fair argument to say it was any worse than the first one.
I don't think that's a bad thing. That's a stylistic choice. They put the hero in the background so that his character was like Batman, hidden in the shadows. You didn't know him very well, you know?
All right. They'll call it freaking Joker.
Still warm for my butt. Thank you very much.
All right. Can I do my story now?
Fine.
So I'm not saying it's going downhill. I'm just saying that...
I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, because they've done a pretty good job, but I'm still a little worried about this.
We'll see. Spider-Man 3.
Spider-Man. Okay, I have some news. Board game news. We don't do a lot of board game news, so this is my board game episode as well.
Risk 5.
No, but the World of Warcraft board game is coming out very soon, before Christmas. Big, giant board. I mean, big board. 200 miniatures... 500 playing cards. I mean, it's crazy how huge this is. You get to pick whatever
how
class you want.
How expensive is this game?
It's going to be like the Twilight Imperium. It's like, yeah, like $70, $80.
Oh, my God.
Go fetch us a comp copy.
I'm not sure how
long... My people don't work for Blizzard anymore. Now they work for NCSoft.
I'm sure they know people who...
Well, this isn't a Blizzard game.
Oh, it's not?
It's just licensed from Blizzard.
Kind of like Sid Meier's Civilization, the board game.
That ball of suck.
Hold up.
Did you try that?
Here's a little picture.
Is that a yes or no?
Yeah, I tried it once. You know, I could barely get through the rules.
Huh. What rules?
And
is this?
I know
game
the
of
rules.
Thrones?
The Sid Meier Civilization board game.
Oh.
It's pretty.
It was too much.
Well, this looks like it's going to be a hell of a rule. I think they're trying to get everything in, all the classes, all the races, and that's one of the reasons why there's so many cards and stuff.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
It's like Magic the Gathering. Had a ugly love child with the Lord of the Rings game.
Yeah, it's huge. So anyway, those of you who love the World of Warcraft video game, who want to sit around and play with your friends, this might be good. Well, maybe we'll round up a copy.
I don't know.
Maybe. I'll check a Board Game Geek, get a rating, and then we'll check it out.
I mean, I'm willing to give it a shot, but that looks awfully complicated.
We're still getting our Serenity RPG, aren't we?
It hasn't come in the mail.
I was excited about that.
No, we haven't discussed it, actually. Apparently, the RPG game company heard our podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, the makers of the Serenity role-playing game.
Along with Margaret Weiss, who is one of my favorite
that
authors.
That is the maker.
Oh, really?
Margaret Weiss Productions.
Oh.
Or Margaret Weiss Publishing.
I thought it was the woman who is just the woman who wrote most of it. I thought she heard our podcast.
No, it's her company. Someone at her company.
Excellent.
And so they were intrigued. So they're sending us comp copies to try it out. We're going to read over the manuals and run a game of it, and we'll see what we think.
Yeah. We're excited about it.
Yeah. Though, mind you, we should caution Margaret Weiss Publishing that we are not easily bribed, and we will still be truthful to our journalistic integrity.
That's right.
And give a legitimate, honest, forthright review of the material.
Don is the Jeff Gannon of this. Never mind.
Stop.
Okay, that was my news story. Anybody else have any?
We haven't had a good Jeff Gannon reference in weeks.
Weeks. Don, roll it.
Oh.
With a story.
Okay.
A news story.
Like, I have no dice. So, this week, I come to you with photographs of the world's largest serving of calamari.
Excellent.
They have caught photographs for the first time of a live... giant squid.
I heard this on NPR.
Yeah, and apparently the measurement of this one, they're guessing, is around 40 feet.
Yeah.
But they're sort of guesstimating because they accidentally ripped off one of its testicles while they were grappling with it.
Tentacles?
Tentacles. Tentacles.
Tentacles. Tentacles.
He ripped off... How many testicles?
They intentionally ripped off the testicles. It was accidentally ripped off the tentacles.
Yes. Right.
I was listening to NPR
this
morning.
This massive tentacle was on the deck of the ship still grappling the crew members for quite some time.
Oh, my God.
I didn't print out the photos, but we'll go to the website afterwards.
Cool.
Yeah, I got to see this.
Damn that extra testicle.
They've known they're there. They've found dead ones in the past.
Yes.
There's one in the Museum of Natural History.
That's 80 feet long.
That's a big guess.
I don't think so. I think the one in the natural history was smaller than the one seen here.
The one I've seen in the natural history doesn't look 80 feet. It looks like
it really
20
it was
feet.
Like 12 feet long tops.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
But they're saying that they're estimating the largest ones down there. The largest one on record, they said, was 60 feet long.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Okay, so octopuses are very intelligent, actually.
But these are squids.
So are squids the same way?
They're different creatures.
Yeah.
But do they have the... Because I know octopuses have a lot of intelligence. They have a lot of... They have the ability to open jars with fish in them. Do squids have intelligence, too? Does
they didn't
know that?
Really get into the article,
wait,
and frankly,
they can open jars?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they can... If you put a fish in a jar, the octopus will figure out how to open the jar and get the fish out. On top of that, my friend, his best friend used to own a pet store.
And he was in a jar.
And
trapped.
And he was losing fish. He couldn't figure out why. So one night he stayed in. And he watched as this octopus pulled itself out of the tank, crawled to another tank, pulled itself in, ate the fish, and then crawled back to its own tank.
Wow.
That's bizarre.
That's freaking bizarre.
In fact, a lot of people say that if we, you know, zap ourselves, that octopuses will be the next thing to evolve to intelligence, to super smart intelligence.
Oh, who says that? Them?
If that's what you...
That's what the octopus was telling him.
Sure.
Yes.
Honey, could you help me open this jar? All right, Matt, do you have another one?
Yes, I do.
Peter or somebody?
Peter.
Yeah, I've got a rumor, which is just that they're talking about Google Office at some point in the future, which is basically like any program, Microsoft Office, that you would use, except for instead of having a program, you would use it through your browser.
Right, right, right.
And I just thought that was – I mean, I've heard of this before – but I heard it again. I just thought it was such an interesting concept. You know, you wouldn't have to...
Us Mac people will not be seeing that, probably. Which is a drag.
Yeah.
I prefer to keep my documents on my computer.
Well.
Okay.
It's
well, then you do
I'm
that.
Possessive.
Not possessed?
On Tuesdays.
Okay, good. Anyway, so the U.S. insists on keeping control of internet governance. Basically,
internet governments?
Internet governance.
Governance.
Yes. Basically, we control the internet. We control what is called the U.S.-based Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, or ICANN.
Right.
And basically, the UN, there's a UN body that is trying to take over control of the internet in basically say it needs to be for everyone. And we're saying, no, it's under our control. We are going to maintain control. It is ours. Mine, mine, mine. No, no, no. You don't get it.
Isn't that a private company?
It was... I don't know, but it was developed by the government.
So yes.
Oh, okay.
It should be government-owned.
Yeah. We will not agree to the UN taking over the management of the internet, said Ambassador David Gross, the U.S. Coordinator for International Communications and Information Policy at the State Department. Some countries want that. We think that's unacceptable.
Well, yeah. You know, they can, you know, build their own intra-whatever.
Yeah. They basically say...
That's like us building a bunch of railroad tracks, them using them and say, oh, wait a minute, you should give them over to us.
Yep.
Doesn't make any sense.
Nope. We are
not exactly like that.
It is not negotiable.
Why not? What's the difference?
Well, it's an EU proposal.
Besides, there's no trains.
Right.
Besides the fact there's no trains, there's no railroad tracks, that there's no physical entity, that it's something...
There is. There's cables.
Yeah.
And there's an infrastructure.
They don't want the cables. They're not asking for the cables.
They want the infrastructure.
It's concepts. It's intellectual concepts. There's a difference. I'm not disagreeing. Anyway, let's talk about why we might want to control that. I mean, you know, there's what benefit would it give us other than, you know, the government spyware probably is easier to use if we control everything.
Well, it's very interesting because we're saying everything that is the United States is .com, and we're allowed to say .com, .net, .gov, everything like that.
That's
everyone
true.
Else who is in another country has to do like .co.uk, or they're basically licensing their ability to use a URL from us. So basically, the same ambassador said that the United States was deeply disappointed with the European Union's proposal Wednesday advocating a new cooperation model, which would involve governments in questions of naming, numbering, and addressing on the internet. Basically, they want a lot more governmental involvement, and he said, no, bull.
Can you imagine registering your internet?
Internationally? No.
Yep.
Ugh. Wow. Just take that much longer.
Yep.
It would take 5 minutes instead of 2.5 minutes.
So?
I just quickly want to... This weekend's box office summary.
Ooh.
Serenity, number two.
Really?
$10.1 million.
How much?
$10.1.
Not bad.
That weekend, yeah.
How much did it cost to make?
Not sure. Flight Plan was number one. It's
really?
Been out several weeks.
Again, yeah.
That, two weeks, I think.
That suck week. Butt piece of nonsense?
I've actually heard it's pretty good.
Yeah, really? I think it was good too.
Well, I actually didn't expect Serenity even to really chart that well its first weekend out.
I read that said they polled people. They said 50% of the people that went and saw it said they were fans of the show, which I guess is a good sign because that means the other 50 just... weren't yeah. fans of the show and went and tried
that
it out.
Serenity might do well for a while. I mean, it's a good
That's
movie.
That's what I was going to say. It's going to be word of mouth that carries it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I've heard people talking about it. So.
It's a good movie.
Well, beat out Corpse's Bride, History of Violence, Into the Blue, which only... That was really the thing that I thought was its...
Really? Into the Blue?
That looks like such a steaming pile in all of
well, it's exactly it why it would like, be the number one movie that weekend. That
Did you mean... I heard reviews on NPR for that. And they were so awful.
Yeah.
They talked about how awful it was.
Metacritic has it like super
And there was another movie that opened that The Greatest Game Ever Played also opened.
That's right.
That golf movie.
That's
which was like number 10 or something.
Number 9.
Which you couldn't pay me to go see.
Yeah.
You just couldn't pay me.
$3.66 million. So, out of all the movies
weekend.
That I thought was competing for that opening...
Into the Blue
was the only one I thought was like directly...
And yet, no.
And
I would have put my money on Corpse Bride.
It opened the week before.
Corpse Bride was really...
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard it was
It was good. Okay, great. Yeah, saw it. Bye.
And then before moving on to our topics, I just wanted to bring up these board games that we, most of us play. The Geeks played, and then Don and I played again one other time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we played a couple board games for the first time in a long time.
Yep.
We played...
Well, and all three of these board games had one thing in common that I want to bring up first, because I think it's really interesting.
Two out of the three that I'm going to bring up.
Oh, well, you're bringing up two games. I'm bringing up three.
Okay.
Nah. Which is all three of those board games we played were cooperative board games, where
right.
everyone's working together to achieve one goal.
Right.
Which is so spanking new to me.
Right.
I'm so loving it.
Well, the first one we played was Arkham Horror.
That was
and
cool.
We ended up playing that again. Oh, I played it over at Don's. It's a
was it better the second time?
It was just a little more
was
clear.
Was it better with someone else?
No, it was not.
Okay, good.
But it's a H.P. Lovecraft genre game where everyone plays against the game. There are demons and monsters trying to get through portals in this small town, and all the players play investigators trying to shut down these gates and save the town, essentially. Pretty good game. It takes about 2 to 4 hours to play, though, and there's a lot of pieces, and it's a little complex to play. So
yes.
those of you just want a simpler game.
It's easy to play once you know what you're doing, but the rules, learning the rules is
the
such
rules
a
pain are in the obtuse.
Tail.
Yeah, the rules are obtuse. It's a little bizarre. But we did play another game, which I thought was better. It's mm-hmm. called Shadows Over Camelot,
yeah.
and that was another cooperative game where everyone plays a Knight of the Round Table.
Knights of the Round Table, yeah. we fight when we are able.
Sorry.
The fun of it, though, is that one of the characters may or may not be a traitor.
Right. There might be one traitor among the players who's secretly playing against the rest of the people playing the game.
And Peter got the traitor every single time.
No, the first time.
He got it the first time and just did it for the kicks the second time.
He just betrayed us, even though...
I'm assuming.
I'm the one that's just been stabbed in the back right now.
No, but the great thing about this game is it takes about an hour to an hour and a half to play with probably seven... I mean, I think you can play up to seven people.
Yep.
You all really do have to work as a team. You have to really communicate with each other.
Go for the grail first.
And but anyway, I would definitely investigate that game. It's a real blast to play. And the other one that I played is Carcassonne, which is not a cooperative game, but
it's a tile game
that we play.
That was great.
Super simple rules. Great. You can play it with the two players and probably up to, I think, five or six.
I would fear Don at that game.
It's a great game. It's a German game, but go check it out. I'll put a link to it on our website.
What's up with those Germans? They're whipping out some really good board games.
Right now, the Germans are really into board games. It's very huge over there.
Because everyone that comes over here is just amazing.
That's how they're conquering the earth.
The other game I wanted to bring up is an older game and also a German game. It's the Lord of the Rings board game, which I think
all
of us here have played. It is.
Yeah.
It is German.
Hmm.
Where all of you are playing hobbits, running from the Shire all the way to Mordor.
Fatty is really useful.
Basically playing hot potato with the ring. while Sauron keeps advancing towards you. So the object is to keep the ring bearer alive long enough for him to.
It's like
it
the corruption of Sauron's moving toward you.
Exactly.
You become corrupt as the game moves.
And you're all
forward.
Working together, right?
Right.
So towards the end of the game, it gets to the point where like people are throwing themselves into the jaws of Sauron, going, "Take me, let Frodo go."
Right.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah, that's very.
That's a great game.
So we did get to play some games, and I'm hoping to play more here in the future, and we'll report on them.
I want to play that airline game again.
Yeah.
I got to say. You know, I was not a real big board game person until we started to play.
You haven't played Talisman yet, man.
These are fun. I'm really enjoying this. This is
once we've got plenty more.
Once Peter plays Talisman, he's going to be on the phone to you all the time. Like, when are we playing Talisman?
See, I've always been a board game geek, but I've always been completely devoid of board game geek friends.
And
people who don't play board games are really hard to convince to play a board game.
Is that why you got the card games?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Sort of a surrogate.
That I could kind of convince people to play, even if I wasn't really that excited to
play. Like Lunch Money?
Yeah. I mean, like, I like Lunch Money, but it's...
Card games are, like, easier to, like, to trick people into playing.
Yeah.
Because they think it'll be over in a hurry.
Right. It's like, you know, it's like playing a round of, like, you know, blackjack.
Right.
How much can it hurt?
Yeah. Right. Meanwhile, 2.5 hours later, you're still playing the game. All right. Is that all we have?
Yeah, let's talk about Battlestar.
Well, I got one last little thing. Tiny little thing.
Okay.
Anybody got a friend who's really, really hard, like, sleeps really heavy, won't wake up, or ever had a roommate who did that?
I am never sleeping in your house again, no matter how this story ends.
I found this really, really cool site called www.iwantoneofthose.com. And there's a thing called a sonic grenade. And basically what you do is if you have a roommate who oversleeps all the time, you take the grenade, you pull the pin, you toss it into the room. 3 seconds later, it just bangs, goes off, and then won't shut up. And he has to find you in order to put the pin back to shut it up. Otherwise,
you can buy
it won't
this?
Go off.
You can buy this from the site?
Yep.
Oh, that's great.
And it's the sonic alarm, and it's brilliant. Yeah, you basically pull the pin, yell fire in the hole, and go for it, you know?
It'll Parents everywhere out. Are going to love it.
Yeah. You just totally reminded me of a story of something that happened to somebody I know in college. She was a big baseball fan and had one of those baseball alarm clocks that you throw at the wall to shut off.
Right.
Problem was her dorm was something called the Towers, right? And she was on the 22nd floor of the tower. And she slept with the window open, right? Which is a kind of an arc out type window. So when she woke up one morning, she grabbed the thing, she threw it at the wall, missed the wall, hit the slanted window, and it went straight down the side of the building 22 stories, ringing the entire way. Okay? Didn't hit anyone, no one was hurt. Later that day, she's in class, and two rows ahead of her, she overhears two people talking like, "Yeah, I heard the weirdest thing this morning. I'm dead asleep," and suddenly I hear this, no idea what it was.
Crazy.
I love that.
That's the sonic grenade right there.
There's pictures.
Yeah, we'll include pictures
it's
so you can see.
Yellow, and it looks like a giant, deadly bumblebee.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yes. It's ultra cool. I want one of those.
Oh, it looks like a freaking grenade?
Yeah.
That's even cooler.
No, it is. Yeah, I'm telling you. You got to go to this website. It's www.iwantoneofthose.com, and they have everything from, like, specific things to pick up insects that you don't like touching, you know, and it'll get them every time. It's just, it's got really, really cool gadgety stuff.
Cool. All right.
So we figured we'd start this off with Bear performing live the Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Do we have any cuts of Bear's music?
I think we owe someone copyright fees now.
Yeah. Well, how many bars can I sing before I'm in trouble?
Less than that.
Oh, okay. I'll edit the first part out.
Excellent.
It is our Battlestar Galactica episode. Bear is our guest, and...
And that was the classic Battlestar music you were humming.
That was amazing. How did you compose that?
Yeah.
What was your inspiration?
I traveled back in time.
How old were you?
Yeah,
like, two?
Great. Now I'm picturing some pregnant woman sitting there on a bus with this little voice humming.
I'm not sure. Obviously, you've seen every episode. Matt has not seen.
I've seen nothing.
Right, you don't have television.
I saw the miniseries, and yeah, I took TV out of my house, so I just got video games and a computer, and that's it.
I had to be convinced to see this.
I don't even know actually. You anymore.
Aaron was really upset.
And I convinced you.
Actually, remember when I came over and saw...
10.
Right, that was the first episode I saw.
Mm-hmm.
I saw about 20 minutes of the miniseries. I went, nope, click, turned it off. I was one of those...
Aaron doesn't like ships that look like Cylons.
I don't like the design of the ship, but there was all sorts of things that turned me off about the first 20 minutes. So these guys begged me to give it another chance because they were so into
We're talking about it every week.
I love the miniseries. Miniseries.
And so I don't know how...
I invited you over.
You did a little marathon of interest,
but no. They started replaying it, I think, on Sci-Fi Channel, and because I have TiVo, I have the luxury of being able to capture one. So now it's one of my, it's my all-time favorite show. Great freaking show. I think we, all of us here, except for Matt, who doesn't know what he's missing.
I love it passionately.
I know what I'm missing.
I feel that season two is a bit of a decline. I wasn't as happy with season two.
We'll talk about that later. We'll talk about that later. But I just wanted to, you know, tell the audience where we all stand. Peter and Don, I think you guys... started out watching the show and were fans right off the bat. It took me a while to be. It took me convincing because I was a fan of the original show,
big time.
And so, I know what the original show is. I mean, I put it in its place. It was very cheesy, and it, you know, it's essentially a Star Wars ripoff. I mean, Star Wars was so big they had to do some type of television version of it to cash in on that, and that's what it was, and we all wanted that type of thing, especially as kids.
They even got sued for that, right? And lost.
They didn't lose. They did. It was going to go to court. They didn't actually. I don't think they ever ended up going.
They just settled.
Either they settled. I think honestly, I don't actually know, but I think they were canceled before it even. I mean, I think it became a non-issue.
Right.
At some point.
How many seasons
would it run?
Yeah,
one season, and then they came back with Galactica 1980 for 8 episodes. By the end of season 2. Oh. I will have scored more shows than Stu Phillips ever did on Battlestar Galactica. We will have produced more shows than they ever did for the original.
Wow.
So how did you get involved
That's
in this?
Totally like Star Trek.
Before we move on to actually crunching the show, we want to know how you got to the point that allowed you to
be
get
a composer.
Involved in this.
Yeah, well, I worked on the miniseries. I was one of...
But even before that, how does one find somebody like you? And
were you born?
Present your resume. Blake.
Yes. I was born on a cold winter's day. No, I wasn't. I was born in Florida, so it was probably hot and muggy and miserable. No, I mean, I always wanted to write film music, and I was like the uber film score nerd when I was a kid. I'd be like 9 years old and go to see a movie in theaters, and all my friends would come out talking about how cool it was, and I'd be like, do you remember the music in that one part where the guy like does his little thing and the music everyone looked at me like, what the hell are you talking about?
I was the exact same way. I have stacks of soundtracks.
Yeah.
So everyone was listening to The Police and AC/DC, and I was like, you know, wearing a hole through my, you know, Empire Strikes Back.
Right,
you know.
Right. I didn't even get into pop music until I was in high school.
Wow.
And it was only because I found out Danny Elfman had a rock band and I got into Oingo Boingo. And that's when I went, oh, there's pop music that's okay. Like, I was...
They didn't even know he was involved with Oingo Boingo.
Don and I didn't.
I'm sorry. Shame on you boys. Anyway.
So you were... So, you know, that was obviously, you know, a dream of yours.
Yeah.
And then,
so I started writing music when I was in high school just on my own.
What was the first film that you worked on?
It's hard to say. The first film I scored.
What was the first good film that you worked on?
Well, let me start with this.
Yeah, you can't.
Let him finish his story. Let him finish his story. The first film I scored was one that didn't exist. I was in high school. I was 17. And I knew that I was always writing these little tunes. I mean, anywhere from 4 to 10 minutes long. And I just wanted to see if I'd be able to score a film. And I was growing up in Bellingham, Washington, so there weren't exactly a lot of filmmakers there. So I wrote a screenplay that was like 40 pages, and I just visualized every shot, every line of dialogue in my head. And then I spent a year scoring this thing. I wrote 80 minutes of music.
That's cool.
And I just did it after school, every day, weekends. Like, I just became obsessed over this thing. But I wanted to see if I could actually keep, like, some thematic ideas together and write something that held together after 80 minutes.
That's very slick, cool, man.
So that was the first thing I ever did. And of course...
What was the movie called, by the way?
It was called The Amazing Saga of George.
The Amazing Saga
You know what? You're the first person to ever ask me that. Well, yeah, it was a guy that lived in this planet where the whole planet was one city
named George.
Aliens invade and hilarity ensues and he rescues the princess and the whole thing. You know, it was very cheesy.
What are the aliens called?
They weren't called anything. That's the thing. You never quite figured out what they wanted, and it wasn't like the cheesy, like, we have to have the aliens take over the scientist's mind and tell everyone what they're doing, Independence Day, you know, so that you have to have this blatant exposition. It was just kind of like you kept it from his perspective, and, you know, he just wants to, like, rescue the princess and save the day and you know, get out alive and that kind of thing. I mean, it was an excuse for a bunch of action set pieces, everything I could possibly conceive of, because that's what I really wanted to score. I was like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if aliens invade, and then I need a spaceship dogfight scene, and then what else do I need, you know, and the comedic side characters, I need a comedy theme, and, you know.
Oh, so you were writing your screenplay to score it.
Exactly. I wrote the screenplay in order to have something to score.
Exactly. Right. That's really interesting.
Basically, he was...
That will never happen again.
Yeah. Exactly.
Prepping himself for Battlestar, pretty much. You know, aliens invade.
Basically, like, yeah. Spaceship dogfights and Battlestar. Since then, I'd like to think my music has improved a little bit, because I scored the entire thing with my little Yamaha keyboard that I had.
Oh, that is kick-ass.
Yeah, dude.
Did you use rumba at all?
No, I didn't use any of the rhythms, but I did use some of the sounds. Yeah.
All right.
Now, I know that you have... that at an early age, you ran into Elmer Bernstein, and he became a mentor of yours.
Yeah.
Now, for those who don't know... I mean,
who is Elmer Bernstein?
Tell us who Elmer Bernstein is and how that happened.
Elmer Bernstein is one of the most important people in the history of film music. One of the, you know, most important figures of people in the film history, I think. He got his start in the 50s with cheesy sci-fi movies.
Kick-ass.
And he graduated to The Ten Commandments, Man with a Golden Arm, went on to The Magnificent Seven, The Great Escape. Ooh. To Kill a Mockingbird.
Which he won the Oscar for, right?
He won his Oscar. He was nominated for many of these things.
He did not win for To Kill a Mockingbird?
Nor The Magnificent Seven, or... he was nominated for...
Okay,
in the 70s,
we'll get
there. He went through Westerns after Magnificent Seven, then he went into comedies. He scored movies you guys might have heard, like Ghostbusters, Animal House, Airplane, Blues Brothers, Trading Spaces. And then he went into dramas in
when
the 90s.
When did he start working?
He started working in 1950. He was the first composer ever to make a career last 50 years in history.
Ooh. Wow.
Because everybody before him was in the early stages of sound movies. They came in when they were established. So they started scoring when they were 40 or 50.
Right.
So he was... Jerry Goldsmith...
He was like the perfect age to hit it when he was young.
Exactly. Exactly. So he hit it when he was young and worked, and he died last year at 82. And his last Oscar nomination was Far From Heaven, which was in 2003 or 2004.
Yeah.
It was recent.
And he worked pretty much till the day he died, right?
Absolutely, I mean, yeah.
You know. Crazy.
So, I got in touch with him when I was in high school and worked for him for many years and he was my mentor. And
did you learn the craft from him? Did he really sort of take you through it?
You know, I think I learned the craft from him. Not to say I learned how to write music from him, but I learned the ins and outs of the biz and most importantly, dramatic interpretation. And he was a guy that really showed me that, that if you look at a scene, you can score it the obvious way, but if you look at it, there's a million different ways you can score it, and it'll totally change the way that it comes across. Mm-hmm. And I think he was one of the smartest film composers, and I really mean that. I think a lot of guys today will look at a shot or look at a scene and be like, oh, well, that's obvious. You put a scary thing there.
Well,
and
just Ghostbusters is one of my favorite films of all time.
Absolutely.
And the way that film turns on a dime from absolute horror to bright is amazing.
Well, his method was it was something that you know, sometimes you just don't have time for anymore, but he said he would watch the movie again and again and again. He would watch it for a week. And then he would just get it. You know, he would just get what it needs, and then that's how he would, you know.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and that's...
that the way you work now? Or
I
try
wish.
To?
I try to. I mean, with Battlestar, Battlestar is different. I don't have that kind of time. But B, I'm not reinventing the wheel every episode. I know what my sound is. I know what my characters are, you know, and I know what the music's going to do. So at this point, I'm really fast. When I see a show, Battlestar, I know what it's going to need. Hmm. But certainly when I got started, when I did the first episode I ever did, I definitely took a lot of time and just tried to figure out what what it needed.
I would think it would be even more important for a series, because you start becoming locked in.
Absolutely.
It's like if you make decisions at the very beginning that you regret later, you are locked in, or either that or you have to slowly evolve it, because if the next episode it's like, what the hell?
Well, the funny thing is I learned it the hard way, but I didn't really foresee that. And the score that I wrote for the pilot of Battlestar was, we were taking a lot of the themes that Richard wrote in the miniseries, which to finish the story real quick, I worked for Richard Gibbs and he scored the miniseries. I ended up collaborating with him and helping him write out a bunch of the extra additional cues, and he took on the show. Mm-hmm. And when he left to go back to feature films, because I had already worked with him and worked with his sound, they gave me a shot at doing the show. And
wow,
there you go. So the first show that I scored was the pilot, not the pilot, the, you know, episode 133.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up writing some cues that I didn't think would be important, and some of these little pieces that I wrote ended up being thematic material that I'm still using.
Okay. Well, I've noticed definitely, and actually maybe right after this you can explain what the work process is for one episode, because I don't think even really I understand what it takes to get through one episode and how long it takes. But I have noticed that even the first
Even
episode,
you, Aaron?
Even I know. Well, I'm always listening to music. But I've noticed the first episode that I saw with you at your house, you had you would change the sound. You have kind of this Middle Eastern sound, mm-hmm, through a lot of it, but you had given the Adama and his son a different sound, mm-hmm, from a different culture all of a sudden. And now I'm hearing that come up again. And I'm now at that point I went, huh, I wonder what that's saying about those two people.
Right.
And now I'm even thinking of it more, like, huh, was that just something he played in there? Or is that something that was a discussion that's going to come out later? It's like, you know, it could have been a small decision then, and now it's rippled down.
That's kind of the way it works. And some of those things come from the producers. Others are ideas I throw in. Mm-hmm. I was amazed at how much people noticed the Irish and Celtic influence, because for me, it's just another culture. I'm already, people are like, well, you know, you have that kind of like, you know, Arabic thing or whatever. And I'm like,
you have the taiko drums.
Well, I have taikos from Japan. I have African drums. I have, you know, I have stuff from all over the world. I just didn't have a lot of Western things. And that's what I think people caught. It caught their ears here.
Maybe that's
I key into voice, right? So every time I hear the voices coming in, to me, that dictates what the flavor of the piece is.
Right.
So your voices sound very Celtic to me. So to me, it's always been Celtic.
Yeah. Well, for me, and even Richard in the miniseries uses bagpipes, albeit very subtle compared to the way we ended up using them on episode 10. Mm-hmm. And he used it in the scene where Apollo first hugs his father for the first time, and they have this father-son reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that cues that up again, you'll hear this bagpipe flavor come up beneath the strings and disappear. So,
in the miniseries
from day one, and it was very subtle.
Mm.
And honestly, it was after we had the idea to use it again in episode 10 that I went back and thought, hey, we've used this before, haven't we? And then I realized, it was a father and son moment, and lo and behold, it's a father and son moment again. And I think the reason that it is that the bagpipes feel very warm and personal, mm-hmm, but they also, there's something kind of more noble and more and military almost about it. There's this like sort of noble
big time.
Yeah. So when you have these two guys that have this strained relationship, you know, they have this father-son relationship that doesn't work. They have the commander and, you know, obedient soldier relationship that obviously doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to make sense. And so obviously at the time when we were doing that, I thought to myself, this is a theme. This is something that's going to come back.
So you do
you've gone in and
hashed out basically each person has an individual theme?
Yes.
Boomer has an individual theme? Okay, so who's your favorite?
Character or theme?
Theme.
I got to say it's the Adama Scottish theme because it's so resonant and so immediate. Everyone else, I would be amazed if even any Battlestar fan could tell me what all the themes are for each character, because they're so subtle.
You just started it on the forums.
My favorite character is the president, and I can't think of her theme.
For me, the president's theme is the same as the Cobol theme, because she became this mystical leader and this prophet. And I start off with a theme when they discover Cobol and the boy soprano sings his tune. And more it started coming up as she's having these, you know, introspective moments. I started using it because she's having, at the time, certainly in the middle part of season two, I thought she was going delusional. Keep in mind, I don't get to read this. I could read the scripts. I choose not to read the scripts.
You're on the ride with
Yeah, so I don't know what's coming next. And so she, you know, and so I start seeing her, you know, following these prophecies. And so it makes sense that this, you know, this theme for Cobol would continue. Honestly, after episode 7, when they leave the planet Cobol, at first I thought, well, I'll never use that theme again. Too bad. But then I thought about it, and there will be places for it to come back. But let me backtrack real quick and tell you, so this doesn't always work. In episode 6 of season 1, two characters that we know have a relationship, Boomer and Tyrell, they had this kind of hidden relationship. They break up, and there's this big emotional, you know, turning point with them. So I wrote them, like, I can get a love theme in here. Awesome. Everyone loves love themes. And I can bring it back every time now for the rest of the season. They're going to be, these two are going to be, you know, they never, rest of the season, they never even, like, they shared one more scene together.
Right.
And I had written this theme and placed it really carefully, and it never came back. Right. You know, and then it came back in season 2. But it was so different. I mean, it was such a different context. So basically, there's a love theme that went absolutely nowhere. You know,
you were trying.
I can't let discussion of personal themes slide by without bringing up the Lady in Red's theme.
Ah, yes.
Because I watch the episodes by myself first, and then I always end up watching.
I don't
want to
know anything
else
about that.
I tend to watch other people as they watch the show.
Yeah.
And every time that single note starts playing,
yes,
everyone slides forward on their seats.
Yeah.
Every single person just slides into place.
Maybe it's a Pavlovian thing.
Well, and also, and then I noticed it became the theme to the prologue.
Yes.
Played before every episode.
Well, I got it. Giving credit where it's due, that was all absolutely Richard's idea. And he came up with, in the miniseries, I think that was one of the first things he wrote, because it was obvious that her character was almost like this omnipresent narrator in a weird way, and certainly she's become the icon of the show.
Yeah.
And it does have a neat repetitive quality, and we sometimes anticipate her arrival with the theme, and sometimes in the beginning I would say to the producers, I'd be like, well, you know, this theme will start, and then 10 seconds later, not 10, but sometimes 5 or 8 seconds later, then she'll appear on screen. And I thought, well, we're kind of giving it away, but they were, you know, they stuck by it, and I see what they were doing. And now when I watched it with people also, it's the same thing. You hear it and you kind of go, something's happening. And then she'll lean into Baltar's ear. And
you feel like that she's,
it's like the whispering. You hear her breath, like, or something.
Right near the end of season 1, there's a scene where the Exo's wife has showed up.
Yes.
And she's drunk on a trellis or something. And she leans into shot.
Very interesting
scene.
Before the
theme starts and says, there's something important here, isn't there?
Yeah.
And then the theme started, and then everyone in the room started freaking out.
Yeah, it's a powerful and simple tool that that Richard set up in the miniseries that was is one of the most useful pieces of music I have to work with for sure on the show.
Wow.
So how does a block of your work schedule work for one episode? How do you get footage?
How long
in
do you have?
That's the question that always comes up. People say, well, how long does it take to score an episode of Battlestar Galactica? And that's not the right...
It depends on the episode.
Well, time. I take absolutely as much time as I'm given.
Right, of course.
So if I have 3 weeks, it'll take 3 weeks. If I have 7 days, it definitely takes seven days.
So then how does the process go?
That's the right question to ask, because the process is always the same. And I think of my time in sort of percentages. And I realize, you know, that the first third of my time should be creative and writing and nothing else. If I rush that, if I spend, you know, just a quarter of my time writing the notes and the rest of it, we record a bunch of cool stuff, it'll still be crap, you know? So I try to spend as much time as I can writing, and I always prioritize the really cool cues first so that I have all my energy, and especially once the time gets shorter, you know, I want to make sure I have all my energy for the best cues. Then it goes into recording, and we have anywhere from 3 sessions to the episode called Pegasus had 10 sessions.
And I remember asking you this before, but most of your stuff is live. You get the full...
What I usually say is anything that sounds live is.
Right.
Anything that sounds like a synth is a synth.
Right.
So yeah, so we record a lot of live drums.
We have Tycho drums.
That's great. Middle Eastern frame drums. Mm. We have Doombex, tabla, chang chang. We have all sorts of really weird stuff.
And didn't you say you did gamelan at one point?
We record. We have several bells. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Gamelan freaks me out.
And really we use a lot of gamelan sounds. A lot of the sounds you hear, a lot of the gamelan sounds you hear are ones I've created actually out of other sounds. Like I was had to fix one of my PCs that broke down, so I pulled it out of my rack and I pulled off the metal cover, which is basically 2 feet by 2 feet metal square. Mm-hmm. And I leaned it up against the door and I hit it with something and it went boom. And I was like, wow, that's cool. So I brought it over to my engineer's place. We sampled it and actually made like a bell piano sound out of it, and it's one of the sounds I use. Other stuff you hear, like you'll hear trash cans, me scraping a trash can with a fork, and then I add stuff. One of the things that knowing I'd be using a lot of synth sounds, I was horrified of using synth sounds and then hearing them on other shows. Right. It's a pet peeve of mine. I know most of the fans probably wouldn't notice, but I always notice. So I try to create custom weird sounds and stuff like that. And
slick.
Like I said, though, we do have a lot of live instruments too, and a lot of the pivotal episodes have a full string orchestra.
Very cool.
Which is cool. How many singers do you use? 'Cause I love
anywhere,
the voices.
Anywhere from 2 to 6.
And you've been in it, right?
Yes. When there's a paycheck involved, I can carry a tune. There you go.
I've actually never noticed a male voice in there. It's always
there's my brother does a lot of male vocals.
Really?
If you could listen, the most simple spot to pinpoint it is in the main title of season one, right before the drum montage. There's this the music kind of stops and starts to decrescendo a little bit, and you'll hear this one voice, sounds like very throaty, high, screaming voice echoing off in the distance. That's a male voice, and we did the same effect in Pegasus when Baltar is. I won't spoil anything for anyone who hasn't seen it. Baltar is talking with a prisoner, and he's confessing a lot of things that we haven't heard him talk about, and there's this very atmospheric music, and there's a male vocal in there, too.
Oh, we're going to spoil the hell out of it here in a minute.
Yeah. I better just put my fingers in my ears and hum.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's very cool. I've the original music of the original open, I was never a super big fan of actually the music that ended up in the episodes because they were so heavy in the time period of the show when being created.
Yeah.
But the open music of Battlestar Galactica, I think, is one of the best all-time television themes ever.
Absolutely.
It is absolutely freaking amazing. I'm glad to see that it's now being sprinkled. I think it appeared like maybe once in episode in the first season.
It was in the miniseries. I remember
it was in the miniseries.
It was in the miniseries for about 30 seconds.
It's also popped up again.
In season two, it popped up in the Lucy Lawless episode.
Yeah, in episode 8.
Yeah, episode 8. And I was like, hey, there it's back in.
I tell you, I watched that entire thing and didn't realize it was Lucy Lawless.
Was she blonde again?
Idea. She's blonde.
And she's using her real New Zealand accent, which threw me off.
Right, that did threw me off, too.
And she didn't have the metal breastplate either. That's when I was like, I don't know who I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Could be don't recognize with their clothes on.
Yeah, I know.
But it is amazing that even the tease of that changes the way you're... it's so... it's like when you're, watching Smallville, and they sometimes tease it with the music from the original Superman movies.
Yeah.
Suddenly, you get this connection feeling that even if you're not even hearing it, you gotta get this connection.
They did that in the Christopher Reeve episode.
I'm curious if
everyone
gets that, or if it's just geeks like us.
Well,
like
here's
the Superman.
Everyone does. Everyone does. They just don't understand that it's the music that's making them feel that way. I mean, music is really powerful that way.
And the only reason why I'm bringing this up is something that you didn't write and you integrating it is that there is the split between these two shows, and we all know that there are some big differences, and there are people like me. This show is called Geno to some people, which is Galactica in name only. That's what they call it, Geno. They're fans of the show, but they don't call it Battlestar. They call it Geno.
Nice.
I consider it a full Battlestar Galactica, but what it does do is it does give you that, just at the hint that there is this thread between them. It's not saying that it is a sequel. It's not saying anything, but it's just giving that teeny little bit. And I always get a kick out of it. So,
well, that was one of my favorite moments in season two.
He cried this last time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I cried when it came back.
That's good to know. Actually, I took that moment very seriously. They were going to drop in. They were looking into dropping in a recording of it, of like the Boston Pops, like a really kind of cheap recording that they could get.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
And I said, hey, you know, let me take a crack at this. I know I can do this. And so I left Universal. I got on my cell phone and I called Stu Phillips, who wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Stu, I've always wanted to work with him anyway. I said, I'm going to use your theme. Can I come over and get your scores?
Mm-hmm.
I went over to his place, picked up all the scores. We sat down for like 20, 30 minutes, went over everything. I said, these are the themes I want. I want to incorporate some other themes from some of the other, from the prologue of the show also, mm-hmm. not just the main title.
Oh, I love the original prologue.
The original prologue.
Dreamy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And in fact, what I did is I did two versions. I did a version for the show because the version for the show built up for like 90 seconds of this chorale
mm-hmm.
that I started throwing in little hints of the Battlestar theme and then taking them away
mm-hmm.
and then putting them, you know, longer hints. And then it explodes into this big orgasm of the trumpet fanfare.
Right.
But then it stops.
Right.
And I actually did an extended version that covers the entire theme. So I actually created a, like, 4.5-minute piece of music.
Oh, very cool.
Which will end up on a soundtrack album in the future.
Woo!
But I wanted to make sure that I did it right and I didn't just, you know, transcribe the theme by ear. So I made sure I had all the inner voices right and all the themes right.
It really did work in great. And it also kind of snuck up on you. You just didn't really think it was going to happen then. And we
well,
never
one of the
been
things,
teased with it before that
exactly,
I
exactly. And one of the things that I felt really strongly about, they had the temp score for that was one of those Irish pieces that I had written. It was very moving and very lush. And you hear the monologue that she's saying. Mm-hmm. And then it just goes into the Battlestar theme, and for me it was just like being dunked into ice water. I was like, whoa. I mean, it was cool, but it caught me off guard.
Right.
And then I thought, you know, let me try this and see what they think. And so I did this version where it starts off with this lush ballad and then it keeps adding in these moments of the theme. And then the day before the dub, the executive producer sent me an email and he goes, you know, I hope it's not too late, but I got this idea. What if we did something that sounded kind of like the theme, and then starts sounding more and more like the theme, but then you kind of take it away, and then you bring the theme back, but then it goes away, and then the theme gets really big. And I was like, well, I'll see what I can do by tomorrow, man. It's kind of short notice.
Now I got to tell you, Bear is kind of like Scotty from Star Trek.
Right, he overestimates.
Yeah, yeah.
he tries to be prepared, like. Constantly
you cover your bases.
Thinking right. about stuff and, you know.
Do you tell them that it's going to take a lot more time and then come in with less?
No.
Always do that.
I can't do it. I can't. Yeah. But I do have the power.
But I once or twice I know that, you know, he's been not quite sure. But is it okay if I say this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Am I speaking out in school? You can cut it out.
No, it's fine. Yeah, Let me say it. Let me do it then.
You say it.
I'll say it. Sometimes you're never sure what they're going to want. So there'll be scenes I score two or three different ways.
Right.
And I'll just go in. I mean, it takes extra time, but I'd rather score it two or three ways in advance, and if they don't like it, be able to say, boom, let's try this.
That's just doing I don't know your why job. They wouldn't yeah. like that. I mean, that's a great idea, and not only that, but it gives you a chance to make a decision
totally.
After the and makes them I mean, you haven't gone full into it, but you've got
the reality is the reality is that everybody working on this show is creative and everybody's got really useful thoughts to add, but no one has the time to listen to my demos, come over to my studio, talk right. with me about it. So I meet with them beforehand. We have an initial conversation that as the season's gone on, it gets shorter and shorter. I mean, at this point, you know, a lot of times I'll just see the show and already I can tell where they're going to go with it.
Right.
And then when we get to the dub, if there's any, you know, then it's good to have options because then everybody's back in the same room. And then people like to say, well, you know, what if we try this? And what if we try that? And a lot of times, at this point, I'm getting pretty good at knowing if I see a scene, I go, I'll bet you they're going to want to try it this way. I'll just do it that way. Because the reality is anything that doesn't get used will get used.
Right.
With the amount of music that this show has, your average show, I would say, has anywhere from like 9 to 19 minutes of music. A friend of mine was scoring when he was working on Desperate Housewives, was shocked when they were pushing 21 minutes of music. Every episode of Battlestar, the shortest one I've ever done is 28 minutes of music. Most of them are 34 minutes of music. It's wall to wall.
That's a lot of writing.
Yeah, so when there's cues that don't get used, it's never heartbreaking because I go, this will come back. You know, we'll use this somewhere else.
What's been the biggest pressure cooker episode? Where it was just like,
episode 10 called Pegasus for two reasons.
That's
the last. So the last.
The one I just finished like 2 weeks ago was the biggest deadline I've ever had to make in my life. It makes finals week in college look like Christmas break. It was the best.
It was a big episode.
Big episode. So the creatively, the stakes were high because I knew it was one that people were going to talk about. It was at the end of the run, so there was absolutely no time. I got normally season one, the beginning of season one, I had 3.5 to 4 weeks to do each show. They wouldn't come that far apart. They would come in about a week at a time, but I could do them in groups.
Mm-hmm.
Pegasus, I got 7 days before it was dubbing. Oh. And it was 30 minutes of original music that needed a rock band rhythm section, a country guitar, three vocalists, a full string orchestra, and the totally standard taiko drums, Middle Eastern winds, electric violin, everything. Mm. So we recorded everything that I just said in 2 days.
That's right. That's the episode that started out with some type of rock.
It was a pop rock thing in the beginning, yeah.
It
wasn't even like...
That was bizarre. What was behind that?
There was a decision that the producers wanted to go in this direction. I think they wanted to. I mean, really, I think
that
they
was
were
bizarre.
It was
Did
very
you have
strange.
To talk Bear off the ledge, Peter.
Bear's pretty level-headed.
All right,
we got through.
I have to say that was bizarre for me because
it was very
strange. After seeing that many episodes and not ever feeling that way with that type of music.
Totally,
it started out that way. I mean, it started out with that.
That was the end of the teaser.
Yeah, I remember that going.
Yeah, it's very strange. But that's exactly what they wanted you to feel because they really wanted this to be like, this is the turning point in the season. I mean, I really think this is the setup for a major, you know, new turn of events. We have new characters.
Right.
And the way they wanted that sequence to play is that it was, I mean, literally Adama says this is like a dream. Like, this is the weirdest thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a really strange decision at first. But then the more I thought about it, I go, well, if I did something that sounded like everything we've heard, you go, oh, yeah, it's a new scene, right? They, you know, they find a thing, and wow, it's pretty weird. But if you really get people to literally sit up and go, what the hell is going on?
Right.
You can't really fault that. Now, does it fit in the score? Of course not.
Right.
You know? But I don't think that was the point. I think that really was supposed to be jarring and supposed to be really...
It was jarring.
And I agree. And, in fact, my original version was even less, and I got notes. They were like, no, we really want to push it further. The last weekend, I mean, literally the Sunday before it aired on Friday, we were recording new electric guitar hits for the last
That's crazy.
So,
so you're on hiatus now?
I'm on hiatus for another 2 weeks about, yeah.
Okay. That's why you look well-rested.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Season's only halfway done then.
Yeah, that was the mid-season finale.
When does it start up again?
Right,
January.
The show is in like quarter seasons.
Here's what happened. Not that I've heard this for sure, but this is my theory. Mm-hmm. Sci-Fi got really excited when it aired, so they go, "We need new episodes in July, and we want 20 episodes."
Yeah.
And it's like, well, if you wanted 20 episodes in July, we should have started like 6 months ago.
Right.
So I think the deal was that obviously. From my description of me scoring episode 10, it's safe to say that the editors, the visual effects people, we were all just down to the wire on that one. There's
it
no
was a big episode,
there's no way we could have done another 10 after this and kept it, you know.
Right.
So,
with any sense.
I mean, exactly. They had all new sets because they had another ship. They had a new digital model of a new Battlestar. Well, actually, they probably had. No, it was new.
It was new. It was very
good. You know, a whole cast with a whole, you know, they have a new captain, new CEO. I mean, everything. I mean, it must have taken freaking forever just to get that one out. And expensive, too. I'm sure that was like a really expensive.
Well, they usually know the episodes to go all out on, which is one of the, whenever you hear real strings. I mean, obviously, it's not in the music budget to have a string orchestra on every show.
Right.
But they know when they need it. And I've never had to fight them to say, look, guys, the synth strings aren't going to do it.
They
know when they need to. And I really appreciate that because... A, it makes me look really good, but B, there's just no way to fake that real string orchestra sound, and it connects immediately. And whenever all the fan letters I get are about those string pieces because they communicate so much faster than synths. And admittedly, those are the scenes that are better, too. So
what has been the fan response to your music specifically?
Well,
I mean, obviously the show has been getting
right.
Yeah,
huge. I mean, Time Magazine put it as like the...
one of the six best dramas.
Yeah, not even sci-fi.
There's no other sci-fi shows on the list, yeah.
It's funny because I run into people...
of all time or just...
on TV right now.
Yeah,
okay,
TV,
I was going to say.
I run into people all the time when I mention that Bear composes for that. They know the music and they comment on it all the time. I mean, all the time.
I can't say this, that I know how lucky a break it is to land a TV show that, disregarding how successful it is, that uses the music so much and lets it be a character and lets it be noticeable music. There is good music out there, but on TV, but it doesn't.
But that's also one of the things about sci-fi is that sci-fi always is setting mood deliberately.
Yeah,
and the fact that music then gets to be a very strong set piece in that, especially if it's space sci-fi,
right,
where you're dealing a lot with nothing,
right?
You know, so. It's like, hey,
I don't know if you'll take this as a compliment or an insult, but like the first thing I can think of to compare it to is Babylon 5, mm-hmm. which used its music to the hilt. Mm-hmm. It was much more synthy, but
yeah,
you know.
Now you have a CD,
yeah,
and your CD. I mean, I seem to recall
you pimping them out.
Yeah, a little bit.
Mini pimp.
Here, would you pass this 50
over
to people?
The Battlestar already has a soundtrack.
Oh yeah, he's
season one soundtrack came out in June.
I didn't know that.
You're behind, Aaron.
It was like the top seller on Amazon.
It made it into Amazon's top 100 in 2 weeks, and it's been anywhere between 200 and 300 ever since then. It's been and the label's amazed. It's become the biggest seller they've ever had, outselling stuff they've had out for like 5-6 years.
Very cool. Sci-Fi Channel is freaking dry. You know, I mean, they're like having kittens right now.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they didn't know. They thought they had a little cheeky miniseries when they probably. I mean, because Richard Hatch was the guy who originally was trying to pitch that.
I don't know if you guys know the story, but they declined on a series after the miniseries. They didn't even want to do it.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, the reason everyone was, well, how come it aired on Sky One first? The reason it aired in Britain first is that David Icke wouldn't take no for an answer. He went to England and he said, hey, if you guys fund half of this, you guys can air it first.
Oh,
then came back to Sci-Fi and goes, hey, I got, you know, how'd you like 50% off, basically? Oh. And so they picked it up.
Interesting. I didn't know.
And then they got the play and we're
and then suddenly everyone's downloading it 6 months before it airs.
So
I don't know if they're.
So second season renegotiation must have been really interesting.
Yeah, but the British will get theirs. When the second 10 air, they're going to air a few weeks early in the UK.
Good.
Well, we should probably talk about the show itself for a little while.
We're already an hour and 16. We should actually talk about this season. Since the season has just closed, season 2 of Battlestar.
I'll be off in the corner humming.
So we're not talking about music now. We can totally just nerd out on the show.
We can nerd out.
Because I'm a huge fan of the show.
We can.
Nice.
Hey, you know what? I do stuff all the time on stuff I don't like. I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes you just have to do, you're just working.
No, the funnest part for me is like getting to go in and see what happens next.
Yeah, you're lucky that you are working on a show. Because you would take a job.
Oh, totally.
That, you know, was work.
Yeah,
it is
Judging
a
Amy.
Blessing that you got on a great show.
Yeah,
that you're able, and they're giving you the license to add to what is great and help it along, because that does not happen all the time.
Yeah,
it does not happen.
So somebody was saying season 2 is not as good as season 1.
I believe that. Standing by the state.
I think that was Don.
I kind of agree. Although
season 2 is only halfway done.
Oh, well, I know. There's still plenty of time for them to get back to what I loved about season 1, which was about, like, one, the psychological manipulation of the vice president,
mm-hmm.
right? They had amazing episodes about psychology.
Yeah.
The torture episode was
Wait a minute.
Freaking
the
amazing.
The entire second season was the conflict between the power of her presidency and the power of a man who owns an army.
Conflict is not psychology.
Well, the diplomacy between that and the psychology of those two things is definitely...
And there wasn't, actually. I would say the first 4 episodes where she's in a jail cell and there's almost zero communication with them, I would say that would be a null...
Okay, playground. So there was no, like, mano-a-mano psychological thing.
Yeah.
But one
of the things I love about the first season is there are all these small... insidious cruelties that people do to each other
because they're stressed to their limit.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's funny you would use the word small, because what happened at the end of season 1 was so big and huge
that people were traumatized by that.
That there's no in a way, I think, because I do agree that season 2 was different than season 1, and and I don't think that season 2 got as good as season 1 until episode 10, where.
Agree.
It really, I think, kicked it up to a whole new
what
level.
What was episode 10 again?
When they find the Pegasus.
So the last episode.
The last one we just saw, yeah.
Well, I would also say go back a little bit before that. I'd say some of
yeah, here's what happened. A little bit before that, episode 7 is basically the end of season 1. Episode 7 is where these big events from the end of season 1 are finally closed. And so they made the decision not to cop out and be like, you know, the beginning of season 2, and it's like, everyone's okay, you know, like, close the book on everything.
But what I've noticed is that And maybe I haven't been able to pick up on a pattern yet because I don't know what's going to happen next. But what they do is they set up their major event as a cliffhanger, obviously. And then that shockwaves to at least the middle or three quarters of the season.
Yeah.
So the finding the arrow, finding the essentially the roadmap.
Adama ending up in trouble for anyone that hasn't seen season one.
Right. but that roadmap was... like four episodes.
Seven. I mean, it was end of episode 7 is what Ron Moore described as the end of season 1.
Okay.
And you can feel it because the beginning of episode 8, all these people that were stranded all over the map and on all these different planets and people in jail, people in the hospital, everyone's back on the Battlestar and they're okay.
To me, it was just those middle episodes, 7, 8, that were the weakest, and that was and strangely enough, that's when I felt like they had decided to say, wait a minute, you know what, why don't we try an episodic? Like they actually had a couple, for the first time that I've seen on that show, an episodic. Like they had a storyline that ended, or that began and ended on that episode. That was the Lucy Lawless episode, and I think there was one other one.
To a certain degree, the next one, when in the beginning, Chief Tyrell is upset about his relationship with Boomer. We see him working on a ship. He says it's unserviceable. By the end of the episode, he builds a new ship. He repairs his relationship with her.
Right.
There are some loose threads, but it's a standalone.
It's another episodic, really. And those to me, and it's strange because I used to be an episodic
kind of guy
because I didn't have time to pay attention to it to every episode.
Pre-TiVo?
Yeah. But now I have a TiVo. Yeah. I can watch 24. I can watch Battlestar. Yeah. Like, I couldn't watch Battlestar without TiVo. Sorry.
Well, I do feel sorry for people that are tuning in now. One of the things that's amused me is they have the previously on Battlestar Galactica. And up through, in season one, I don't remember, but up through up about 4, 5, 6, they would show you, by the way, this guy sees a chick in his head and she ain't real.
Right, you get it.
They're not doing that anymore. No. So anyone you know what I'm saying? Anyone tuning in, like, well, let's watch episode 10 here. There's no explanation why this chick just appears. I do kind of feel sorry.
Although, you can now buy the DVD.
Yes. This is true.
Which I have to go pick
I have it ordered on Netflix, and it's impossible to get.
Now, one of the things that I like so much about the series is it does what Star Trek used to do, which is that it would take real serious issues and it would weave them into the story.
Right.
So we've got, for example, we've got the episode in the first
season
where the ship shows up, and on the ship there's a nuclear bomb. They don't know why the ship is late in showing up, and they have to make a decision. The ship is coming towards us. It's not stopping. We tell it to stop. Do we blow it up and potentially kill all these innocent people?
Right.
And it's like a real issue.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? Now, what you were telling me something about that in the original...
In the original version of that, they fly by the ship. They look in the window. They see it's filled with people.
Right. It's too easy.
You know, it was the network's decision to tone it down. And honestly, there have been a couple of the moments that they have changed the show. And I have to say that I'm on the fence about that one. But the rest have been really good.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised. You know, they've been getting pretty...
there was a disclaimer in the third act of the last episode 10.
They're getting really hardcore.
The Abu Ghraib episode.
Yeah.
They're not afraid to tackle real issues. It's great.
Well, I didn't think that they would be. I would think that Sci-Fi Channel might be like,
you know,
we're owned by NBC, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I
think they've done a pretty darn good job, though. I mean,
no,
you know,
I agree.
Really, I mean, you know.
Well, I think they've finally understood that people are okay with it. And ultimately, you know.
Well, we have a desensitized television audience. We have a television audience who's seen it all. That's why there's the batch.
We're in a time right now. You cannot do anything on television.
No, but that is also true. Both of those statements are true.
But what I'm saying is basically we have an audience in terms of film, in terms of television, that is very informed, that has seen a lot of everything on TV. So you're not going to surprise them. That's why there is this, you know, retaliation to go to reality TV.
Yeah,
so when you can finally take an issue in drama and then make it
pertinent and make people go, oh, this is what's relevant to me.
And you can also put the mask of sci-fi escapism. Right. It's not really real. It's not NYPD Blue. This is like a...
Right. Which is strange because this show is very NYPD Blue grittiness.
Yeah.
You know.
But it's like, let me sum it up by saying this. I had a friend that loved NYPD Blue and 24, a couple other shows like that. It was a friend of a friend's, actually. And somebody was telling him about Battlestar, and I was telling him a little about it. And he's like, oh, it sounds cool. And I go, well, you know, we've been compared to 24 and The West Wing, these kind of shows. And he's like, he interrupted me. He kind of put his hand up. He goes, but wait. It's on, like, spaceships and stuff, right? And I go, well, yeah, but... interrupts me again. He goes, no, you missed the point. The thing I like about 24 is blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, wow, you just totally shut me down because it's on spaceships.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think he's reacting to Star Trek.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they got into a rhythm, which the original, I thought, actually did not have the problem that the new Star Treks have, which is...
Well, the originals were actually sci-fi.
Yeah, I mean, they would go and do an episode about Vietnam.
Yeah.
And now, you know, and they just started getting more and more watered down, and people now are expecting that type of stuff out of science fiction because they see things, well, at least television science fiction, they're starting to get, you know, these long-in-the-tooth shows and... They never really, you know, they dance around the issue, but they never really just jam it the knife in.
Well, Aaron,
and here's one that does that.
Aaron, you also brought up a point about the original Star Trek, was that the thing about Bones, Spock, and Kirk was that you always got the sense that they would die for each other.
Right.
That there was this deep, deep caring between those characters. And from what I've seen of the miniseries and the little bit of the first season that I've seen... That's what you get here, is that there's deep caring at least about the people and the issues.
That's true, except for there's one small gripe I have about the entire new series, which I think is a way better series than the original Battlestar. I mean, to argue...
Wow, that's on a recording, dude.
Right, that's on a recording.
Yeah, he put that live.
I really...
Charred and feathered when he leaves.
the original show is a great show, and it is very fun to watch. You go back, sometimes it's hard to watch a couple of those episodes. Some of them are just crazy bad. But there's this, there's this feeling about it. It's fun. They don't tackle any issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's Star Wars things, you know, every light has the star filter on there.
What was the name of the dog?
Daggett. But the one thing that series had that this one doesn't with a couple of their characters...
It was a Moffat.
Oh, it was a Moffat.
It was, yeah, exactly. Okay.
It wasn't called that, yeah.
Was that the Apollo Starbuck friendship or relationship... was so strong. They were kind of the Han Solo Chewie.
Yeah.
And they really did a good job in the original series of making you feel like these guys would die for each other. And they were the kind of kick-ass war. Like, Starbuck was essentially Han Solo.
I mean,
he really was. In this series, they are not focusing... on the same type of characters as the original ones. In other words, really, in the original one, Starbuck and Apollo were like the main characters.
Yeah.
And in this, there is definitely not that way. It is an ensemble cast in every respect, where there is almost everybody gets their day in the sun in this series. And I kind of wish that we would have a little bit more time with the Starbuck Apollo relationship and get that feeling back a little bit more.
Well, but their relationship is so different.
True.
I mean, their relationship is very tense right now.
No, that's definitely true. I just felt that I feel like they need the relationship needs more airtime.
I understand what you're saying with it, but
even if it's a different relationship, just their relationship needs more airtime.
But this series is opening up so much more.
No, like I understand that.
With this, you have the father-son action going on that you never saw in Battlestar Galactica.
True. No, I understand there's a lot.
What's even more interesting
on
to me is the father-daughter stuff. This is the first series I've ever seen where you have a father figure, even though he is not Starbuck's father, right, in a relationship with a warrior woman, right, where you have him risking his daughter in battle.
Yeah,
which is something I have never seen in any sci-fi.
Well, the original one, he had a daughter. They kind of combined it a little bit.
Let me guess. She was an utter wuss cake?
No, she was
like every other female character who I've completely forgotten from the first series?
No, she was a bridge officer.
But she wasn't, like, out in the Viper getting shot at.
She wasn't
at
out in the Viper, but she was, you know, she's kind of kick-ass.
I mean, the thing I remember best from the first series was an episode where they shove, like, they're out of male pilots or they're all got food poisoning or something. So they stick all the women in the, yeah. the Vipers, and they're giggling.
No.
They're
no,
giggling. That's you know, wrong.
I'm not defending that or even comparing, you know, that type of stuff. I mean,
look,
it's an extremely sophisticated plot and it's extremely sophisticated relationships going on with, I mean, political relations that are amazing.
No, I think I know exactly what you're saying, and I can tell you guys that everyone on the show is aware of it, and I know that you know, Mary McDonnell, I think, was concerned about you know, that her character wasn't warm enough, and there were scenes as the season went on, you know, you see her put her arms around Starbuck,
right?
Because she was like, I mean, here are two female characters, they don't even like know each other. Right. You know what I mean? And and they've been making a serious effort to humanize Edward James Olmos, his character, more. And I feel that when I start doing the music, when starting in episode 6 and 7, when he makes his decision to forgive and forget. And
what's
you
great
know,
about
and,
that is they worked that into – that may have been a decision where they felt like they weren't getting enough from the character. But the great thing about that is I felt they worked it into the a reason why. Like after
absolutely.
He got shot, he changed, which was great.
There's another part about that that I actually adore, which is the girl that convinces him to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's such a minor character at the beginning, and she's gorgeous. She's beautiful, and she's so good.
Yeah, she's good.
She's such a great. I mean, she really. I mean, expands the character. It's fantastic. Great.
And the great thing about that is they don't have to make her like this main character, but they gave her a lot on that one moment. That it was like 3-4 sentences.
That was one of the best moments.
Oh yeah,
in the second, you know, where she's like, people don't think I have anything to say, but I do.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and you need to listen to me.
Yeah,
it's great.
That was great.
I had an emotional
great.
Reaction.
I think it's
like,
interesting because like that character has her equivalent under the president, the
Billy
character.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Who I think's kind of gotten lost in the wayside in this season.
Well, a funny story about that. In episode 4, the president. Don't listen, Matt. President escapes. President escapes, and Billy doesn't go with her,
right.
Which is kind of weird. He stood by her side the whole time. And I asked him, why is that? And I think this was even in the podcast. Ron Moore did. He was in a pilot for NBC that was looking like it was going to go.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then it turned out it didn't. So he, in the next episode, not in the next episode, a couple episodes later.
Two
episodes later. Billy, let's go. The president needs you. Okay, and he'll go.
Yeah, I think they did talk about the episode. And I think they actually had worked him more into episode, and then they ended up cutting him out. So it was even kind of
that's
more.
It's funny as hell to me, because that's the only really defining moment that character's had. And to me, he seems to
No, that's not true. Not to argue you, but here's the best thing. The best scene he ever had was when he first listens to Rosalind saying that she wants Starbuck to go get the arrow. This is in episode 12.
Mm-hmm.
And he shuts the door and he says to her, you're out of your mind. This is going to break. This is going to cause civil war. Mm-hmm. You can't do this. All for like drug-induced hysteria. Like he really lets her have it. And I was like, wow, this is a guy that's like taking notes for her.
Right.
And he's telling the president of the colonies that she's out of her mind. And then, you know, she kind of listens to him for a minute, and then he kind of backs down and he offers her a glass of water. Like that's it. But you can feel that like he does care enough for her that he doesn't want to let her do something stupid, you know.
Right,
and I thought that
like,
was a telling moment.
They haven't set up the same relationship between the president and Billy as they have with Adama and his Billy.
No,
right.
And
but
they
at the
both
same,
the exact same function. They're the sounding boards.
Yeah,
you know. And
but at the same time, she's been in a different place. You know, they've been, you know, she's been doing the Nelson Mandela thing where he's been in charge. So I think that we might see more of that now that she's back, the president's, you know, presidency's been restored. And
well, what's great, I mean, I thought the best part of this last season was the exploration of who really is in charge of a government. Is it the person who's been elected or the person who's
with
the head
guns,
of the army?
Yeah.
And everybody knows what the real answer is. We all pretend one way.
Yeah.
You know, we even in this country and around the world, we all pretend.
Right.
But when it really comes down to it, and what was great is that it's put to the test with way fewer people. I mean, you only have what?
47,000 something?
47,000. So
I'll bet you somebody in the message boards knows exactly how many.
I hear that they actually keep that tally running. On
they
the
do,
show.
Yes. It changes everything.
If someone dies in the show, the number goes down on officially.
In the main
cool.
title.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that. Yeah.
But what's great is that we have this new dynamic coming up, and I
I'm not sure how long it will last. In the original episode, Pegasus comes back and they're only in two episodes.
Yeah.
So this one, who knows if it's going to last a season or two episodes. But
I got to ask the question. When the Admiral showed up, did anybody else recognize her? Or were all of you just sitting there staring at her going,
no, she's from Star Trek.
I know you. Who the hell are you?
Ensign Ro.
So you knew. Okay.
Yeah. Maureen actually knew. She goes, isn't that the Star Trek girl?
That was bugging me for a week before I figured out who she was.
Ensign Ro. But she's great, and this is another example where we're going to... Yeah, I do.
I was watching her in the episode. I don't think she has the power that role needs.
No, I think
I don't
she did
buy
good.
Her.
No, I
just
I think
don't
she
buy
did
it.
Good.
The only thing I didn't like was her age, and there was a cut scene where Adama is explaining to the president, you know, she rose through the ranks really quickly.
She's
like
has
a whole
Kirk.
Bio on her, and you're like, oh, she's a badass. Exactly.
Yeah, she's like the
and you,
Kirk.
And then I go, oh, I get it. Not that you need that exposition, but I did, when I saw the show without it, I did kind of miss it, because the first time I saw her, I was like, that's...
I hear that's going to be in the DVD.
It will be.
I
and,
hear that there's an hour and 15
so
minute version of
exactly.
The
I was going to say, it's not like a cut scenes. They're going to put the entire conformed
episode.
Longer episode.
Oh, nice.
And,
nice.
Yeah, so it's going to be cool.
That's what I'll watch.
The problem I have with that last episode, and mm-hmm. I think some Maureen, my wife, found a review that summarized it, was that they reviewed the show and they put a little synopsis in it. A new Battlestar shows up that's filled with assholes. Like, there's no good. They're all assholes.
They were.
It's like the
every
whole
last
ship
one of
is
them.
Filled with assholes.
And how many assholes I got on this ship, anyhow?
Why? <Yeah. Aye. laughs>
And I thought that I wished maybe I know that in the space of time they had to set up a lot of really quick. Like
they'll get there. Trust
it.
Me.
I figure we got another episode coming, and
at
I
least.
See the potential for
the deck chief Laird. We're going to see more of him. We're going to learn about him.
Yeah.
And I also think that her XO, I think his name was Fisk, the guy at the end going, you shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
And he's also the guy who called Ty in the first place to let him know what was happening.
Right.
I think those two guys we're going to see more of.
I can't help thinking Ty isn't long for this earth. And
but, you know, the other thing to keep in mind, though, is just keep the way that they... The way things are run on that ship, it's quite clear that, you know, you got to sink or swim if you're going to be on the Pegasus. The flowery people aren't going to last long. So.
Well, you know, even with most corporations, a corporation has a feel to it. You'll walk into
absolutely.
A business and go, man, why is everyone here assholes?
A jerk, yeah.
It starts from the top down. And it rains down fast,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I can see how a ship can change their attitude.
Yeah,
but
I mean, this isn't like you don't get the impression anyway that this isn't like, oh, I might get fired. I mean, this is like life or death with
right.
with
it's
Admiral
on another
Kane.
Level, right?
You
it's
know,
not like yeah, I'm gonna
you know,
make it in this company.
Yeah,
this is
like
I'm gonna get
compromise doesn't get very far with this lady, you know.
Right.
So I can see why it would.
I like her being the Kirk of. Like, I like her being younger, and I like her
she's like
being,
evil Kirk.
She's like the mirror universe.
Yeah, exactly.
There was one line out of Apollo in this past episode, though, that just twisted for me. I didn't like it. It was the, his name's Adama.
Which is the same as mine, yeah.
Yeah, I was like...
I expect him to go, nya.
So you really are a Nancy Little Daddy's boy.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about the how this... I think they did a good job of setting up, in one episode... A cliffhanger this
which
big.
We're not going to say.
Because I think the last season, they kind of, it was a two, or at least a two or three episode setup.
Yeah.
And after I knew that we only had one episode left. I went, what's going on? We don't have a setup. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Well, there were so many cliffhangers. You're just
yeah,
like,
exactly.
You're like dazed.
And then the biggest cliffhanger, which I hope they get back to quickly, is they learned a clue to where Earth is, and then they haven't really talked about how their plan of having to use that clue. So I hope that they at least say...
They did say...
Sir, we need to check our star charts.
There was a reference
to
that.
They did say
yeah.
It just
maybe
wasn't terribly
it.
Exciting. They just have to get somewhere, you know,
oh,
to
really?
A specific location. They're heading for a nebula or something like that.
Oh, I didn't...
Yeah.
They may be able to triangulate from Scorpio where they need to go.
Oh, man, I totally missed that.
It's... Yeah, it's subtle.
Okay. Well,
yeah, I know. I had a similar.
Like
at
first, I was like,
thing.
Okay, they have the map now. What's the plan, guys? Like, where's the table where they go?
I know.
Okay.
And the next thing you see is like this woman cutting footage. She's like, we need footage of people shooting. And I'm like, who the hell is this?
Yeah.
How come you're not all like, we should be halfway to Earth right now?
Yeah.
But it was
anyway,
cool.
I'm really excited about the next season. I mean, seriously, my wife is totally hooked. In fact, we went to go see a movie. It was some really bad movie, and in the middle of the movie. It was like on a Friday night, and I went, Battlestar's on right now.
We could leave right now.
It's like, okay.
So, yeah, we look forward to Battlestar. It's our big, big show.
You've and converted your wife into a nerd.
I know. I told you I'm a nerd grenade. You throw me into a room and I splash nerd on
it. I'm hard-pressed to think of any other shows I get as excited about as I do about Battlestar.
I'm a big 24 fan, even though the last couple seasons have been getting a little weaker. I always have faith that they're going
to
come
on. I was psyched to see the season premiere of Lost. Like, I was really excited, and then I felt really kind of let down by the first two episodes. I
haven't seen one single episode.
We'll see.
I liked it.
Well, do we have anything else to say before we close this episode down?
Yeah, I just want to throw out, listen, you know, if you're a fan of film music, just throw out one more time, Bear has a CD.
I'm going to go buy it. I didn't know it was out.
Yeah.
Go to my my website's just myname.com, bearmccreary.com, BearMccreary.
We'll put a link on the website.
Yeah, put a link there. You can look it up on Amazon. And
you don't have a big stack. I can just pay you like $20, and you get all $20.
Yeah, well,
instead of like 2 cents.
Who knows? Who knows?
But you just have, like, a garage filled with them. And you sell them in the by the mail.
Excellent.
Well, thank you for coming
by.
Absolutely. You know,
thanks.
Any good reason to talk about Battlestar, especially with somebody who contributes to the show, is great.
And, cool.
You're welcome back if you want to talk about anything geek. Let us know.
Yeah. Come on in.
Come on in because we're willing.
Excellent.
Thank you, guys.
I'm not sure what we're going to do next week.
We'll figure something out.
Geek parents. That's what I want to do it on.
Oh, God.
Oh, like we know anything about
it. I think my mom will be in town.
No. The parents,
we should have
the
my mom come in
geeks.
For an episode.
Oh, right. Not geek parenting.
Oh, okay. That'll be one in a couple of years, hopefully, right?
Yes.
Matt.
I'm on it.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening again. If you want more information about our show, go to our website, www.geeksOn.com, or email us at geeks@geeksOn.com, or you can email us individually, which I guess Don's been getting mail, but we haven't been. You can email us at our geek names at geeksOn.com, and also go to our forums, because they're raging right now.
Although they're saying that we need to fix them, because anybody can impersonate us.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, they're not loving our forums right now.
No, they're not.
They love the forums, but they're not loving the forums.
Right.
Yeah, well, we'll look into...
They're not loving the forum of the forum.
Yeah.
Right.
We'll look into putting a more robust... That's kind of. I'm looking at Peter because he would have to figure this out, and it seems like a lot of work. We're not getting paid for this. We have to do it when we can.
Those of you willing to help revamp our forums, perhaps you can get in touch with Peter through our website.
Peter@geeksOn.com.
Would love the help.
All right, everybody. Have a good geek week.
Great geek week.
Thank you, Bear.
Rock it out.
Bye bye.